coming up on this episode of the Wampa's Lair podcast. Carl and Jason investigate the scenes that lead up to the fall of Anakin Skywalker. From losing his mother to Anakin's dreams of Padme and Palpatine's manipulation, we analyze this tragedy. So sit back, relax, and watch out for Wampas. Welcome to the Wampa's Lair podcast. Deep in the bowels of the frozen ice caverns of Hoth, our hosts, Carl LeClair and Jason Hunt, have been frozen upside down to the cave ceiling with nothing to do but talk all things Star Wars. So make yourselves comfortable, but keep a wary eye out for trouble here in the Wampa's Lair.
Hey everyone, and welcome back to another exciting episode of the Wampa's Lair podcast. This is episode number 93.
That is why you fail.
I am, as always, one of your hosts, Jason Hunt, and with me we have the foe to my, I don't care what universe you're from, that's gotta hurt, Bede. We have Carl LeClair.
Oh, what a dream come true, getting to be attached to the same body as you. When you first said that name, I'm like, is he doing a Doctor Who thing? Because I didn't know their names.
No. That's why I added the line in there, so people would know who I'm talking about, because they're not exactly well-known.
Yeah, right?
But
what a great we are like two heads in a body. It makes
Except
sense.
We argue on sometimes.
Yeah, but that's okay. Mm-hmm. So do they. I'm sure.
Yeah, no, probably.
Like, especially like, hey, it's my turn to shower. No, it's my turn.
I'm going to the bathroom. Stop peeking.
I went last time.
It's my turn to go through the door first. No, it's not. You went last time. Oh, man. Oh, maybe boy. It's a good thing we're not connected.
Yeah. Oh, boy. Well, tonight we have a fun episode. I can't talk. But we're going to be talking about the fall of Anakin Skywalker again. I literally just noticed this was episodes 5 and 6. It was a two-part thing we did. Literally. Episodes 5 and 6, which was consecutively November 30th and December 14th of 2011. Jason, it's been years now. We can say it's been years. It's crazy.
Since we've done an episode.
Yes.
Wow.
But tonight we're going to be looking at some of the key scenes, most specifically in Revenge of the Sith, where we kind of see the explanation, really, of why Anakin makes the decision to turn to the dark side. Mm-hmm. So the goal isn't to go quite as in-depth as we did in the past, because I'm literally, Jason, I looked at those two episodes combined. They're like almost 4 hours. So actually, they're over 4 hours. We're not doing one of those tonight. But I've just been watching a lot of Revenge of the Sith lately. It's weird. I've watched Revenge of the Sith more than any other Star Wars film in the past 6 months, for sure. Even more than Empire, I think. And you know, there's just so many great scenes in that film. And also, I'm just thinking about Anakin because of you and blowing my mind last time. And then you wrote that mind-blowing blog post too, as well, which seems to have really got a lot of buzz going, which is awesome.
Yeah, at least some buzz. I don't want to say a lot because, you know, I don't claim to be an expert in the Star Wars fandom or, you know, a leader in Star Wars fandom, but I like to think I contribute. So it's at least gotten some buzz within our corner of the Star Wars fan community. So that's kind of cool. And if you're wondering what the heck I'm talking about, it is a blog post entitled Why Hayden Christensen, there we go, I can talk, should be in Return of the Jedi. You can find that on StarWarsReport.com. So check it out and share it with your friends and start discussions all over the place. So, because that would be awesome. So,
you know, I think they should have put Jake Lloyd in there, though. That's what I think. If we're going to go that far, or just put Matt Lanter in it.
No. Well, Matt Lanter, I could see, yes. But Jake Lloyd, no. No.
It wouldn't make sense with Jake Lloyd.
No, it really wouldn't. Because then it's like, why don't we see baby Yoda in the Force? Or, you know...
Yoda was never a baby. He just always... he was just always old. He came out and he was like, I'm 100. It's like, okay. That's fine.
Yoda was never a baby. That's
never
awesome.
A baby. It's a myth. If anybody ever told you Yoda was a baby, they lied.
Yoda came into being. Yeah. He was not born.
Right, right.
I'm sure you're wondering why the heck we're just jumping right into the topic, folks, but we had kind of a quick turnaround for this episode between this episode and our last one, so we are extending the poll that is out there on our social media for until our next episode, and that is, which is your favorite Star Wars soundtrack? And that's a complete soundtrack, so which film or Clone Wars or video game soundtrack is your favorite, because there's a couple of really good video game soundtracks out there too. So, and I will probably post that again on our social media after this episode goes live. We've already got some responses, but I wanted more of you to be able to weigh in on this before we revealed the winner of the poll. So keep an eye out for that, folks. And I will remind you about that at the end of this show as well. So, anywho, Sorry, didn't mean to interrupt you, but...
You didn't interrupt me. That was where we were going to go next, was we were going to tell everybody about this poll.
Yes. So, it's looking pretty interesting at the moment. There's one that is definitely in the lead, and then there's like two or three that are in hot contention. But with more people responding, we will see if anything shakes up in that order. So, but anywho, shall we jump right into the topic?
I dare you. let's jump in like Anakin.
See the lava?
Oh, yeah, that's true. Yeah.
Ouch. Anyways.
P.S., were you ever a little disappointed that he didn't actually fall into lava? Remember, like, the old, like, what little tidbits we got from the old story was that Anakin fell into a pit of lava, not that some fire, climbed up his leg. So, you know, It was always like Obi-Wan kicked him into a thing of lava, which would have been kind of cooler, I think. But then again, it was still, I don't know. It's really cool because you need the dialogue.
How would you survive that?
Right.
You know?
Yeah, you need the dialogue scene.
How do you realistically survive falling into lava?
Right.
You don't. So
I don't think you can. I don't think you can survive that. That's a good point. If I fell into lava, I'd probably die.
Yeah, pretty quick.
Then again,
your lungs would be crispy fried before you could scream.
I'm fairly confident you'd get me out. That's what I believe.
I would definitely do my best.
And I think my Force ghost would come back as Hayden Christensen. That or Steve Glosson.
I would say, you're not Carl.
Yeah. Oh, come back, man. I want to come back as Steve Glosson. That's what I want my Force ghost to do. Yeah, and when Joe Hogan becomes one of the Force, he's totally going to come back as Jar Jar.
Yes.
So
look, these are sparkly glory.
Oh no! Anyway,
we
do have this topic to talk about. So if people aren't aware, there's a character named Anakin Skywalker who falls to the dark side in the Star Wars story. It's kind of a big deal. You know, to me, it really all begins back in...
Yeah, kind of like the big deal.
Yeah, right, exactly. And to me, you know, I think you can't immediately jump into the Revenge of the Sith stuff without at least briefly hitting something from Attack of the Clones, and that's obviously the loss of his mother. That's the catalyst to everything that builds up in Episode 3. You know, when he goes back to Tatooine and he fails to save his mother's life, it becomes very clear, especially, you know, the burial scene where he falls down on his knees before a grave and says, you know, I wasn't strong enough to save you, but I promise you I won't fail again. I mean, he makes this pact right there, an impossible pact, really, that he's going to learn the power to save people from dying. Because it's basically he won't let anybody else he cares about die. You know, he won't lose anyone else again to death. And he makes this mm-hmm. kind of foolish pact with himself or with his mother, I guess, his dead mom, that he's not going to make that mistake again. But, you know, nothing you can really do about that sometimes, Anakin. Sometimes
right.
people die. And, you know, but to me, it really kind of begins there.
Exactly. And to sort of contextualize that just a little bit more, of course, Shmi has been taken by Tusken Raiders. And Kleeg says that she's been gone for months by the time Anakin arrives on Tatooine. And apparently, since that time that she was initially captured, Anakin's been having nightmares about her. Because we get that impression that he's been having these nightmares for a while at the beginning of Attack of the Clones when Obi-Wan asks him about it. And he says, you know, Anakin says, "I don't sleep well anymore because of your mother." And he nods, "Well, dreams pass in time." You know, apparently he's been having these dreams for a while now.
Mm-hmm.
And he doesn't know why. And then finally, when he's out on his own with Padme, the dreams become unbearable and he has to go and rescue his mother. So, and he's probably beating himself up for the fact that he wasn't smart enough or strong enough to recognize the dreams initially as a sign, a warning that he should be going to rescue her much sooner. And that if he had rescued her as soon as he started getting those dreams, she probably would have lived. And so that's weighing on him too. So yeah. Not only that he lost her and that he has so much of his security within his mother at this point, you know, knowing in the back of his head she loves him and that she's always going to be there for him sort of thing. So much of security and his stabilization is built into this figure that he's got in his head as his mother. And now that's all just been taken away. And if he had been listening and more ready to just run off, he could have probably saved her much earlier.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Right. Cause he knows he's powerful. He knows he's a pretty inept adept Jedi. And, you know, his failure to act quickly, you know, results in her death. So I think he takes some unnecessary guilt for this, too. You know,
yeah.
It's not fair. There was really nothing he could have done. He was doing his destiny. He was, you know, right? He's going after his Jedi training and everything. He's doing what he's supposed to be doing. So there was really nothing he could do. But again, this does result in him making this ridiculous vow to never allow anybody to die again.
Right. And of course, he, in hate, you know, murders the entire village of Tusken Raiders.
Right.
You know, an entire village. Who knows? You know, it's probably close to, you know, 100 Tusken Raiders in that village, and a good percentage of them were women and children. So people that couldn't fight back.
Right.
So,
but then, you know, that leads us into Revenge of the Sith. And, you know, I think really the foundation of his fall, in light of what happens in Attack of the Clones, but is this dream that he has early on, in the start of Revenge of the Sith. And, you know, he's just found out that he's going to become a father. He knows Padme is pregnant. And then he has this very powerful dream of her dying during childbirth. And
right.
to me, this is the foundation that essentially he builds his fear upon. He is so afraid of losing Padme and so afraid of losing his potential child. Because at this point, they don't know that they're having twins, which I find a little funny considering, you know, how advanced their society is and they don't know. Mm-hmm. Maybe she just chose not to.
She's probably not really going to the doctor because then questions could get asked.
Good point.
You know,
yeah.
So...
that's
just trying to hide this pregnancy, and so, you know, getting out and seeking medical answers with this is probably not high on her list of things to do.
Yeah, that's true.
But, you know, you're right. Anakin has just come from this, you know, wonderful thing where he finds out that they're going to be parents, and he says this is the happiest moment of his life. You know, they're at the landing platform, and they have this really cheesy scene about how much they love each other and whether love has blinded them. Blah, blah, blah. And then he gets the nightmare, you know, you know, things are looking great for Anakin and Padme. He's happy, and he's willing to lose, you know, everything to be, you know, married to her and have kids and have a family.
Yeah.
But then this dream hits, and everything changes because it's like a dream. Like he says after the dream, when Padme's questioning him about it, he says, it's like, I had another dream like the ones I had about my mother right before she died. And it was about you. And so, you know, knowing what happened with his mother, he is immediately hit with this inevitability that unless he changes the future, Padme will die.
Right.
You know, that it, you know, whether or not that's true, that's the way he sees it. That he has to prevent the dream from happening. And that is... The fear and the panic that comes with that is the seed that really kicks off this final roll down the hill to the dark side, you know.
And he says that multiple times to Padme and ensuing conversations in Revenge of the Sith, that he says, you know, I won't let this dream become real. He says the same thing to Yoda when he goes to Yoda for some counsel. Mm-hmm. You know, I won't let these visions come true, Master Yoda. Anakin is going to do anything. He is desperate. That's really what we get. And again, this is why I love the novel so much, because in the novel we get a lot more depth as to, you know, the whole idea of him wanting to become a master so that he can, you know, get access to these holocrons and potentially learn some sort of secret power that might help save Padme. You know, there's a lot of stuff that's kind of left out in the film that leaves us speculating, but at the same time, what it doesn't leave us speculating is the fact that he'll desperately do anything it takes to, you know, prevent this from happening. And it's mm-hmm. very clear he is not willing to listen to Yoda's advice, though, right? Because Yoda says, right, essentially, that's part of life, Anakin. Like, you've got to learn to let go. You can't be attached to people like the way you are. And Anakin, I mean, again, the way that scene even ends, like the look on Anakin's face, it's very clear that none of that sunk in. He right, completely rejects that advice. Nope. I don't want to hear that, so therefore I'm not going to do it. To some degree, you know, you do respect Anakin. Who's the first person he turns to is Yoda. It's really right, kind of awesome and kind of beautiful to show that he does have a tremendous amount of respect for the Jedi Master. But at the same time, when he goes to him, he doesn't get the message he wants. He wants some sort of practical advice to how to prevent this and how to not let it happen. But mm-hmm. instead, all he gets is this passive inactivity, like you let life happen, Anakin, and that's what you have to do. You know, you don't mourn mm-hmm. it, you don't weep over it, you rejoice for it, because that's part of life. And I mean, Anakin is just like, I mean, you can just see it, like that,
right,
the steel cage come down over his ears, like, I'm not listening anymore. Not gonna do that.
Exactly. And to some extent, to a limited extent, I like what Yoda says, you know.
Yeah.
There's some wisdom and there's some truth in what Yoda says.
Yeah.
But in Anakin's situation, he's not having any of it. And in Revenge of the Sith, we really see the outworking of Yoda's quote from The Phantom Menace, you know, fear leads to hate, fear leads to anger, anger leads to hate, hate leads to suffering. And we really see that work out in Anakin in Revenge of the Sith. Because all of this right now is motivated by his fear of losing Padme, and now that he's getting this advice from Yoda that really he doesn't want to hear, he's starting to get angry. And then the next scene that we really see a lot of stuff happen with, you know, Anakin is when Palpatine wants him to be his representative on Jedi Council, and Anakin is granted a rank on the council in order to spy on Palpatine, but is not granted the rank of master. And so now he's getting even angrier.
Yeah.
At the Jedi, and he feels like the Jedi are starting to betray him. Mm-hmm. And Palpatine is, of course, playing that up. But so now we've got the fear leads to anger already done, and mm-hmm. we're not even, you know, far into the movie. So,
yeah. Yeah. And, you know, so to me, like the way I interpret the rest of Anakin's journey, if you will, right? Like if you compare it to Luke's in the OT, Luke's journey is simply to becoming the Jedi hero. Mm-hmm. Anakin's journey, especially for the rest of Revenge of the Sith, has been now transformed from becoming the Jedi hero, the Jedi chosen one, to the one who will stop at nothing to save the life of his wife. Mm-hmm. I mean, the rest of his journey in Revenge of the Sith is simply finding a way to save Padme. And this leads us into, you know, this incredibly awesome scene in the opera. You know, the story of, you know, Darth.
Did I ever hear the tragedy of Darth Plagueis the Wise?
No.
I thought not. It's not a story the Jedi would tell you. It's a Sith legend. Darth Plagueis was a dark lord of the Sith, so powerful and so wise, he could influence the midichlorians to create life. He had such a knowledge of the dark side, he could even keep the ones he cared about from dying.
He could actually save people from death.
The dark side of the Force is a pathway to many abilities some consider to be unnatural.
Whatever happened to him?
He became so powerful. The only thing he was afraid of was losing his power, which eventually, of course, he did. Unfortunately, he taught his apprentice everything he knew, and his apprentice killed him in his sleep. It's ironic. He could save others from death, but not himself.
Is it possible to learn this power?
Not from a Jedi.
I swear to God, you're incredible. And my acting skills are about as good as Hayden's, am I right? oh my gosh. That was perfect. Awesome. That was great. Now we don't have to play a sound clip.
Why play a sound clip
when you have Jason Hunt? I mean, obviously, this scene is Palpatine is well aware of his dream. And I don't know if he's aware of the dream so much as he's definitely aware of the fact that Anakin has an increasing fear over losing Padme. Mm-hmm. There's a good bet Palpatine knows she's pregnant, and obviously he knows why.
I believe that there's some explanation that, you know, because obviously he knows that they're married.
Yes.
So, I mean, he probably is able to sense that she is with child, you know, through the Force. So I'm sure he knows she's pregnant. You know, he's had people spying on Anakin and Padme, so that he knows what's going on. Because Anakin hasn't told Palpatine that he's married, as we'll find out later on.
Right.
But yeah. Palpatine definitely knows what is troubling Anakin and knows exactly how to play on that fear.
Exactly. That whole story of Darth Plagueis is it's really to draw Anakin in, you know, and this is exactly what Anakin hears there, is he hears that there's a potential power to prevent Padme's death. And, I mean, he just becomes fixated on that now, right? Fixated up to this point of finding something, and now he thinks he might have found what he needs to save Padme. There is potentially this power to save people from death. And, you know, that's really, you know, Palpatine has been putting the little, you know, the baited hook in the water and just tapping it a little bit in and out. And now he's got Anakin biting hard and Anakin is latched on, you know, right, because he has found what he hopes to be the ability to save Padme. And again, it's just this, it's a very tunnel vision. He really wants something here, and he's going to just keep doing it no matter whom he has to turn to. And I think that's really important, is it's really showing, and this is why I love the story of Anakin so much, is, again, you know, I wish it was better acted. I mean, I'm never going to shy away from being honest about that. I don't think Hayden Christensen is the best dialogue actor. But all of that even aside, I mean, this is a fantastic story of the power of fear. Mm-hmm. I mean, Anakin is so afraid that he's just listening, and this is a Sith legend, right? Like he knows the Sith aren't good guys. He shouldn't be putting any stock into this story. But exactly. Again, consider the source. You know, consider the source of who's telling him. Even though it is a Sith legend, this is one of his closest friends that's telling him this story. So he's buying into this now. He's really interested in all of that.
Yeah. Yeah. And then when Palpatine sets the hook is when Anakin comes to tell him that Obi-Wan has engaged Grievous, and then he reveals that he's a Sith Lord to Anakin. That's Palpatine setting the hook. Mm-hmm. That's basically when he gets Anakin. Anakin is still working everything out, but that's basically when Palpatine knows he's got Anakin. Because, you know, he reveals that he's a Sith Lord, and Anakin is aghast. He can't believe it. He's shocked. He's angry at Palpatine. He feels Palpatine has betrayed him and preyed on him, which he has. And he threatens to turn him over to the Jedi Council. I find it ironic that he doesn't take Palpatine with him back to the Jedi. Not ironic, but odd.
Yeah.
Odd that he doesn't, and I just thought of that right now, that he doesn't take Palpatine with him or insist that Palpatine come quietly. You know, he's very confused, like, you know, and then of course Anakin shows up to Mace and insists that he goes with him to arrest Palpatine, and Mace says, you know, I sense much confusion within you, and we see that in the end of this scene between Anakin and Palpatine. He's very confused. He doesn't really know what to do. So, because Palpatine says, I know how I can save your wife. And that's the other place where Anakin feels incredibly betrayed, is because he never told Palpatine that he was married. He never told him who it was or anything. And Palpatine knows, which means Palpatine's been spying on him, which is very betraying as well. But then, of course, as I was talking to you earlier before we started recording, Palpatine betrays him with an open hand, so that's the only hand Anakin has left to hold, to grab onto. He's still got this offer of, I can save your wife, but you got to come down this path that you don't want to.
Yeah.
So,
yeah, and again, you know, in that scene, Anakin's response is so knee-jerk, right? What a knee-jerk reaction. You're the Sith Lord. I mean, he pulls out his lightsaber immediately, like he's ready to kill him, you know? Right. Are you going to kill me? I would certainly like to.
I know. I can feel your anger. Gives you focus, makes you stronger.
And, you know, Anakin does know, like, this is a bad guy then, evidently, and he's clearly the one who's been manipulating everything. You're the Sith Lord. But, like you said, I mean, Anakin knows that he can't just give it up, you know, and Palpatine is so smart. Use my knowledge, I beg you, you know.
He's still giving Anakin the choice here, so right. Anakin feels somewhat in control.
Yeah,
but Anakin doesn't really feel in control because of how he's been manipulated.
Exactly,
and that's the brilliance of Palpatine there.
Yeah.
So,
and the way even the way that scene ends, he goes, you know, learn the dark side, Anakin, the power to save Padme. I mean, he is smartly manipulating this truth here that somehow, if you learn this dark side, well, that dark side will then be the power to save Padme. So, in a sense, he's trying to strip the negative view Anakin's probably heard his entire, you know, life as a Jedi about the Sith. He's trying to strip that negative connotation about the dark side of, like, yeah, you know, you've probably heard how bad it is, but it's also the power to save Padme. You know, I mean, this just popped into my head, of course, theology boy, but it's very much reminiscent of the voice of the serpent in the story of Eden, right? Mm-hmm. Like, did God really say you shouldn't eat it? Come on. You know,
right.
It'll be good for you. You know, it's like, it's taking something that you know isn't good for you and kind of putting a little bit of a sugar coating on it, you know, kind of like with Cheerios, like when they're a little boring, you put some sugar on it, but that doesn't, you know, that doesn't make you kill children.
That's true.
But yeah, I mean, I think that's really what's happening at the end of that scene is Palpatine realizes Anakin is pissed off, and he should be, but at the same time, like, he's trying to make something that Anakin knows to be bad seem not so bad, because he's giving it a positive outcome. Well, gee, if you turn to the dark side, you could probably save your wife. Right. Not such a bad idea, huh?
Right. Of course, Palpatine has no intention of that actually happening.
No. Yeah. I mean, Palpatine's going to make sure Padme dies one way or the other.
Yeah. Probably.
Yeah.
Oh, goodness. Sooner or later, Padme would have ended up dead, and Anakin would have been blamed for it by Palpatine. Sooner or later, just because that's the way Palpatine operates. Right. So,
he loves
unfortunately.
Making, Yes. And that essentially leads us up to the turning point, the turning scene of Anakin. And this is the reason that I really want to focus on this scene is because I think it's a scene that I myself, and I think many other people, have felt like it was way too rushed in the movie. And I don't know, in light of some of the things I've been thinking, I don't think it was that rushed. So I'm going to play just the end part of this scene for us, and then we're going to talk about it a little bit. Does that sound okay?
Yes, okay. It does.
All right, let me just
What have I done?
You're fulfilling your destiny, Anakin. Become my apprentice. Learn to use the dark side of the Force.
I will do whatever you ask.
Good.
Just help me save Padme's life. I can't live without her.
You know, I think that's enough of it to prove my point here. But really what Anakin's saying here is he's going to do this because, you know, I'll do this. I pledge myself to you and your teachings. Just help me save Padme's life because I can't live without her. And that is really... You know, some of his actions, I do still think, to some degree, are a little rushed. Like, all of a sudden, he's like, okay, I'll go kill every single Jedi in the Jedi Temple. But all that aside, I mean, I think specifically in the scene, again, it's everything we've kind of built up to. This fear of losing Padme, he wants to find the power to do it. This is the only person that he thinks can really give him that power. So, okay, I'll do it. And I think even, you know, right even before all of that happened, you know, when he cuts off Mace Windu's hand, I don't think he's attacking Mace Windu thinking that Sidious is going to kill Mace Windu. I don't know that he's even thinking that far ahead. I think all he sees is when Mace Windu raises his lightsaber to cut down Palpatine, all he sees is the potential loss of learning this power to save his wife. I mean, it's an act of sheer desperation. He's doing something completely out of desperation. He's not thinking at all, rationally anyway. He's just acting out of his desperation. And the result is the death of Mace Windu.
Right. And of course, it doesn't help that Mace Windu has been, shall we say, slightly antagonistic towards Anakin recently.
Yeah.
So Anakin's already a little bit upset, a little bit angry at Mace Windu. So that doesn't help the situation either. You know, Mace obviously is just really, you know, he says earlier in the movie, I sense a plot to destroy the Jedi. And so that's probably got him worried and confused. And now Palpatine is making a play to have a voice on the Jedi Council with Anakin. And Mace doesn't entirely trust Anakin either. So Mace is, you know, also has a bit of a knee-jerk response in the way he treats Anakin, which, of course, does not set up well for relationships between the two Jedi there, shall we say. But, you know, and in regards to your little point about some of the actions being maybe a little bit rushed as far as Anakin, you know, attacking the Jedi Temple, I don't think so, and this is why. At this point, Anakin has already felt betrayed morally by the Jedi by being sent to spy on Palpatine. And even Obi-Wan has been involved with that because he was the one that said, you know, gave the mission to Anakin off the record. And then now he's basically been implicated in the death of one of the highest members of the Jedi Council. And so he doesn't think he can go back to the Jedi anymore. And Palpatine is the only one who is willing to take him, and Palpatine is the only one who has the power to save Padme. But in order to get that power to save Padme, he's got to make Palpatine happy, and he's got to do what Palpatine says. And Palpatine just says, go attack the Jedi Temple. Wipe out all the Jedi. And he even says, you know, since the Council did not trust you, I believe you're the only one not involved in this plot. You know, thus creating more of a distance between Anakin and the Jedi. You know, more distrust between Anakin and the Jedi. So I think in Anakin's non-clear thinking, non-logical mind, at this point, he has to do this. Whether he likes it or not, this is the path that he has to take in order to, you know, not be arrested or killed by the Jedi, and in order to learn the power to save Padme. Yeah. Because that's his ultimate goal at this point.
Yep.
He thinks he could probably down the road, he thinks maybe after I save Padme from this nightmare, maybe I can still break free of Palpatine. Yeah. And then we can go off by ourselves, me and Padme.
Yeah.
That might be in the back of his head somewhere. I don't know, but that might be running around back there.
I believe the Max Rebo Band had a hit called Me and Padme. Yeah. It's unreleased, of course.
Unreleased, of course. but you know, Anakin isn't like gung-ho about joining the dark side. He just feels it is the inevitable steps he has to take in order to save Padme.
Yeah.
So,
yeah, and you know,
I can see why people would think that his actions and the way he does things might be a little bit rushed, but what choice does he have?
Exactly. And I think, you know, you just made a great point that, you know, I never caught that line. I don't think, you know, because the Jedi didn't trust you, you weren't aware of the plot. I guess I like always misheard that line. That makes a lot of sense. Palpatine is basically saying, yeah, they really were plotting to kill me, but this is why they kept you at a distance, because they didn't want you to know. And right. I think that's incredibly important. And also, too, even at the again, in that scene, you know, go take out the Jedi Temple, wipe out everybody there. Only then will you be strong enough with the dark side to save Padme. You know, again, that scene ends with this implication that you do these things and it's going to increase your power so that we can, you know, get ever closer to that ability to save people from death. So, again, mm-hmm. Palpatine is he's putting something bad with a good spin on it. You know, you do this, you take out these people that betrayed you and betrayed me, and when you do that, you're going to then have enough power to save your wife. And I think that's incredibly important, what Palpatine is again continuing to do, to again just kind of keep that kernel in Anakin's head that he's doing this for a good reason.
Exactly.
And again, and I think that's such a part of the human psyche, is so many times when we do things that we in our gut know to be wrong, but we rationalize to ourselves that it's right because we're doing it for the right reason. Like, oh, I'm doing this for this person that I care about, even if it means hurting somebody else or right. hurting myself. You know.
And the thing to remember is Anakin emotionally is still very young.
Yes.
He's very young emotionally. He's probably hasn't progressed very much past 9 or 10 emotionally at this point, to be perfectly honest. And that's partially the Jedi teaching fault. But he's very innocent in the way that he trusts and the way that he sees things, even though he has some dark temper tendencies, as we've seen throughout the films and the Clone Wars. His motivations are very black and white, very pure, and usually very innocent. And he gets duped into going down the dark path so many different times because of the way he thinks. You know, excuse me, that was a Dr. Pepper burp. I apologize.
Don't apologize. I just love it because you're so cute about it. And you just like keep going.
But, you know, we've made a big deal about how innocent Jar Jar was with Palpatine manipulating Jar Jar to give the emergency powers in order to start the Clone Wars. But Anakin's kind of the same way. you know, he's a bit more brooding and a bit more violent than Jar Jar is, but mentally they're not too far off, which is probably why they became good friends back in The Phantom Menace, you know, because they're hanging out on Coruscant together and all that fun stuff.
Yeah.
But it, mentally, Anakin isn't grown up at all. He's, you know, maybe like 13 or 14 mentally and emotionally. Not mentally, but emotionally. He's very young still. He hasn't grown up. So yeah, a lot of these decisions that we sit here and look at sometimes, you know, as very illogical and very irrational, well, yeah, because of how young he is emotionally. So, and that's what's driving him here, is these emotions and these, this fear of loss and then of anger, and then just to complete this fear to anger to hate to suffering in Anakin and Revenge of the Sith, like I started earlier, we see the culmination of his hate, you know, when he yells to Obi-Wan at the end there, "I hate you." That's when anger is led to hate, and then hate leads to suffering when Anakin is encased in the Darth Vader suit and he is told that he killed Padme.
Yeah.
And so now he is trapped in this suit of armor and is suffering physically because of that, but then suffering mentally and emotionally because he believes that he is the cause of Padme's death.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, I still, one of the best shots in all of Revenge of the Sith as well is that scene at the end where Darth Vader walks up and stands beside the Emperor and folds his arms over his chest in a very mm-hmm. Darth Vader-like movement. But to me, there is a profound sadness in that scene. That if you think just, you know, an hour and a half ago, this was a kid who had a wife, he had a best friend, he had a community of around himself with the Jedi. He has nothing now, literally, right. And he's become a walking casket. He's walking death in a sense, because he has nobody to promote his life around him. And again, like, this is why I love the story of Anakin Skywalker in a sense, is because it shows us the real human cost of fear and how fear can lead to desperation. And that's really what happens here. And in all of these scenes we've kind of discussed, is we see Anakin building up to this point where his fall does make sense in Revenge of the Sith. That he does, when he falls on his knees and pledges himself to Palpatine, it's because he's just so damn afraid of losing the woman he loves that he'll do anything it takes, no matter how irrational, no matter how horrible it might be. And, you know, that's a great point you bring up too about the fact that he's very immature emotionally, mm-hmm. because an adult person would know better,
right?
And he doesn't at all.
No.
So
yeah. Ugh. What? It's very tragic.
Yes.
It's incredibly tragic, because, you know, his love might be a bit obsessive and it might be a bit codependent with Padme, but the motivation, that core motivation that's driving him, is very pure.
Yeah.
It's a very pure desire to want to see her safe and to see her alive and to keep her alive as mm-hmm. long as possible.
Yeah.
You know, that he wants to have this family. He wants to have her as his wife. But just the way he's been manipulated and the way that he's been thrust into the highest echelons of politics and military in the galaxy at such a young age, he doesn't know really what to do with himself, and he's not prepared to deal with that. And that immaturity and that inexperience allows him to be taken advantage of in order to speed his turn to the dark side.
Yeah. So. Yeah. Well, I think we did a good job packing that in.
I think
so. But yeah, again, I thought it's important to go back and just kind of look at some of these key scenes in specifically Revenge of the Sith that really show why it makes sense that Anakin falls. I mean, mm-hmm. in some, you know, to some degree, we all knew as soon as the prequel trilogy came out that Anakin, this was going to somehow be the story of Anakin's fall, and it had to be,
right?
But I just like how human it is. That's what I actually really like about it, is how human his fall is. It's over something that is a very common human fear, the fear of losing people we care about.
Right.
And everything Anakin chooses in this movie, and that is, these are all his choices, but they are choices being informed by fear and desperation. So if there's a life lesson here, I think it's to realize that when we make decisions out of fear, when we make decisions out of feeling desperate for something or someone, that their end result usually isn't going to be that great.
Right.
You know, Anakin had other options. So
he did.
And he chose to, as Yoda says in Empire Strikes Back, he took the easy path. It was the quick and easy solution. Well, I don't want this to happen, so I need to find it right now, and I'll do whatever it takes to find it right now. You know, he goes to Yoda, completely ignores his advice, and he refuses to go to his best friend, which, I mean, to me, that's one of the ultimate tragedies as well of Revenge of the Sith, is, you know, even Padme is like, at the end, you know, like she says to him, you know, Obi-Wan, he knows, he cares about us. You know, I don't want to hear anything about Obi-Wan. It's like, dude, he's your best friend. Like, it's ridiculous.
Yeah.
So
and Obi-Wan even, you know, checks up on Anakin earlier in the movie. You know, we don't see it, but he goes and stops by Padme's apartment and expresses concerns about Anakin's mental, emotional well-being. He's there, and he has a second dream about Padme dying, and Obi-Wan's there. We didn't talk about this in depth, but that scene, you know, is brought on because he senses Obi-Wan's presence in the apartment. He's turns to Padme and says, Obi-Wan was here, wasn't he? And she goes, yes, he's very concerned about you. Says you've been under a lot of stress. And so Obi-Wan was trying. I don't think he tried hard enough, and I think he could have done more.
Yeah.
Definitely. But he was trying to help without being intrusive.
Right. Right.
And ended up a little inert.
Yes. You know, I don't know if you remember this from the novel, but they actually play up a little bit in the novel that they play up the suspicion Anakin has that Obi-Wan and Padme may have something going on in secret. You know, and I think that's something that I wish they had played up a tiny bit in the film, because why is he all of a sudden so offended by Obi-Wan? You know, like even early in the film after the dream, you know, Padme says, like, what about Obi-Wan? Do you think he could help? We don't need any of his help. It's like, whoa, dude, chill out.
This is Anakin's private life. This is his life, and nobody else should be intruding on it. But the problem is Obi-Wan and Padme are friends.
Right.
They've known each other as long as Anakin and Padme have known each other.
Right.
So Anakin's expectations on the situation are unrealistic.
Yes.
And then, of course, that coupled with the fact that Obi-Wan stows aboard Padme's ship when she goes to Mustafar, you know, that gets played up on. You know, he's believes that they have teamed up to betray him.
Right. Yeah.
There at the end. So, yeah, it's, you know, even though they're both just wanting to try and help him and stop him from doing what he's doing. So.
Mm-hmm.
And unfortunately, he gets so clouded and confused by the dark side by that point that he can't see the heart of the matter anymore.
Yep.
So.
Very true. Very true.
Very tragic, which makes his redemption all the more impressive and touching and special.
Oh, you know what?
What?
Before we jump into our next little segment, I just remembered something, why I also was thinking about this topic.
What?
I have Spotify, so a lot of times, like, I'll make radio stations and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a song that came on the other day. I have, like, a soundtrack station. But there's this song that came off of, did you ever see the movie or hear of the movie Oblivion? It's with Tom Cruise. It came out, I think, like a year or two ago.
I've heard of the movie, and I saw the previews. I didn't actually see it.
Yeah, same here. I didn't see it or anything like that. But there's the song from the soundtrack. It's called Oblivion. It's by a post-rock band I really like called M83. And they have this, like, Swedish woman singing. The song is called Oblivion. but it really made me think about the story of Anakin Padme, and it's really epic. I hate to do this to you, Jason, but you're going to listen to it for just a couple seconds, okay?
Okay, no problem.
It's called Oblivion. The lyrics are really, really great. It's essentially about somebody's fall. And it's really epic sounding. Like, it wouldn't really make sense in Star Wars, but I think it's a... If I was good at making videos, I would make like a music video with this song, but I'm not good at that. So,
awesome. Let's take a listen.
Let's see. There's a lot of music at the start. Oh, yeah. I hope you don't mind that I played that for a little while.
Oh.
It's actually a really good song. I mean, you know, I would encourage people to go to YouTube and just check it out. It's called Oblivion by M83. But, like, the song is, In My Dreams, I See You Falling. And to me, it's like it's what Anakin sees. He sees Padme dying. And it's right. Just it's just really cool. And it's essentially, just, to me, it's a song about, like, a failed romance. And that's essentially what Padme and Anakin is.
Right.
So anyway, I just wanted to share that since it was kind of what catalyzed my idea for doing this little topic anyway.
Awesome. No, it's a good song.
But anyway, we were going to talk a little bit about, we thought it'd be fun to just throw out some ideas for who we'd like to see standalone films about, since, you know, we kept getting news that we're going to potentially be getting a Boba Fett and Han Solo film. By the way, what do you call Boba Fett?
Boba Fett?
Yeah. Did you hear Joe Hogan give me hell for that?
Yes, Boba Fett.
Boba Fett. He's from... he catches shrimp on the weekends. No. No bounty's too big, no shrimp too small.
Oh, my goodness. Very nice.
So, anyway. Because, you know... We were saying right before we started recording how neither of us are necessarily a huge fan of a Han Solo standalone film, but you
or a Boba Fett standalone
or a Boba Fett standalone, unless it's about him on his shrimp and business. I know everything there is to know about shrimp business. I know everything there is to know about carbon freeze. But you hinted to me, Jason. You gave me a little teaser trailer before we started recording that you said, but I would like a Han Solo film if, and then you said, but I'll save that.
Yes.
You did say that, right? Okay.
I did. This is the only way that I would like to see a Han Solo movie. And it's not necessarily like the top standalone movie on my list that I would like to see. But if they did a Han Solo movie, this is the way I would like to see it. I would like to see how Han Solo and Chewbacca met and how they got the Millennium Falcon. That would be the only, you know, unless it's going to be, you know, hinted at or told a little bit in Rebels, that's the only way I'd want to see a Han Solo movie, is if we get how Han and Chewie teamed up and how they got the Falcon.
Yeah.
So.
That's a great point.
Other than that, I don't really see the need for a Han Solo film.
Exactly.
To be honest. And it would be really, really weird to have Han Solo without Harrison Ford. Yes. Because if you're going to do it, it has to be a new guy because right. he's too old to play a young Han Solo anymore.
Yeah.
So, and that's more why, you know, and obviously, as I've said before, Han Solo is not my favorite character, but I like him. But Harrison Ford is so iconic as Han Solo that anybody else playing Han Solo is just a little weird.
Yeah.
And I think would be slightly unsettling or slightly off.
And that's not that I
don't think there are other people that could do a young Han Solo, but just to me,
I think Robert Duvall would be a great young Han Solo.
Just kidding. I don't know who that is.
He's in Lonesome Dove. He's the old cowboy. I'm just kidding. Oh.
I heard somebody say Nathan Fillion. Maybe
I don't know who that is. So
Castle, watch Castle.
No.
Okay. Well. He was at Phoenix Comic Con, and I watched Castle, and okay. I could see that sort of, but he's still not young enough.
Yeah, and I think the thing is, too, and that's a good point you make, Jason, as far as this, even the story goes. We don't need a story about one of our main characters unless it's something that's pivotal to his story, right? Like, mm-hmm. why just show Han Solo randomly running around connecting smuggling stuff? Like, while that might be cool, if you're going to separate Harrison Ford from Han Solo, you've got to do something that's compelling and worth telling the story about. Something that really adds to the story.
Exactly.
Otherwise, you're just wasting our time.
Exactly.
In a sense. So,
if you're going to do a story surrounding a main character of any trilogy, or even a minor character of any trilogy, it has to be something that's important to the character. You can't just have, oh, let's go on an adventure, a Boba Fett adventure, woohoo! Boba Fett has to have a reason to have a movie made about him.
Yeah.
And I don't know what we could come up with that's big enough, unless there's something that maybe gets hinted at in Rebels that might be interesting.
Here's what I would like.
To have a Boba Fett movie. Would you like?
If we're going to get a Boba Fett movie, I think we need Mace Windu to have somehow kind of survived the fall out of the Emperor's window, and Boba Fett can kill him. That's it.
Okay.
I mean, if Darth Maul can survive, come on.
True.
Everything's game now.
Darth Maul can survive, Mace Windu probably could have as well. So
yeah, exactly. But let's talk about some characters we would really like to see a standalone film for. So I'm going to actually, for me anyway, I don't want any of the major characters getting a standalone film because I don't think we need that. Mm-hmm. So that's my first premise. Although, well, yeah, except Obi-Wan.
Obi-Wan.
So I'm going to do he's my number one. That's my number one is, normally we go backwards, but I didn't write anything down, so whatever, I'm going forwards.
But we'll just conversation.
Yes,
this one.
But yeah. For me, definitely, I would love to see an Obi-Wan Kenobi standalone film because Ewan McGregor is the perfect age still. He's also the perfect Obi-Wan Kenobi, I mean, in light of Alec Guinness. And it would be so cool. I mean, the Kenobi novel was so good. You could just do another similar Western-style story. And I think with him at least, you know, it would be fun because it'd be a different type of standalone film or a different type of Star Wars film. But it would still have, even though it's a standalone, it would still have merit in our grand story, right?
Exactly. Because it especially if you tie it in with the Lars homestead and maybe why Owen Lars really doesn't want Obi-Wan around. You know, maybe something happens. You know, like we saw briefly in the Visionaries comic with Darth Maul showing up there and Obi-Wan and Maul fighting on the homestead. You know, something, not obviously Darth Maul, but something like that Obi-Wan inadvertently involves the Lars homestead in a struggle or something, and Owen is like, get out.
Yeah,
you can't be around here anymore. You know, something that matters.
Owen and Beru. Hmm? Yeah? Hmm? Or I mean, Obi-Wan and Beru.
That's
Beru, you got any blue milk? I don't know. Do you have a blue lightsaber?
Let's not go there.
I know. I'm just kidding. I wouldn't want that.
Not go there at all.
But yeah, no. I mean, and Ewan McGregor clearly wants to come back. Which,
yeah.
Honestly, I was shocked at PS, by the way, like when they first announced like the new sequels and stuff, and Obi-Wan, Ewan McGregor put forward his interest, and that became public knowledge that Ewan McGregor is very interested in continuing. I was really surprised because I think he was really annoyed by the end of Episode 3 from some of the things I've read. Like, I think he had had enough of the blue screen filming. I think he was very frustrated by that, but it's clear that he still loves the fact that he's part of the Star Wars universe.
Oh yeah.
So yeah, I mean, to me, he would be the one major character I would love to see.
Yeah. And I put this, you know, I would totally agree, you know, something along those lines of Obi-Wan between three and four, episodes three and four. I kind of want to see a Yoda film, but only in a certain light. You know, I don't want to see Yoda connected to a lot of stuff going on in the OT and the PT. If we're going to do Yoda film, let's go back a couple hundred years. I don't want to see young Padawan Yoda. I don't want to see his origins. But let's, right. you know, maybe something how he gets to be on the Jedi Council. Because I assume
right. or the Grand
on the
Master.
Jedi Council for, yeah, or Jedi Master. Because I assume he's been on the Council for quite some time. He's probably been on there over 100 years already by the time the Phantom Menace rolls around.
Yeah.
Is my guess.
Right.
So let's, you know, it has to have some sort of significance to Yoda. So let's, you know, how he becomes a Master, maybe how he becomes a Council member.
Yeah.
So, but obviously people are like, you know, I don't want to go back and see his birth. I don't want to see his Padawan. You know, mm-hmm. I don't either.
There's no birth story. We've been over this.
We have. He's,
Yoda's he always was.
Existence. Yeah. Yoda all. Yes, exactly.
Forever I was.
But, that's the way I would like to see a Yoda film. I think it would be fun, and interesting just to see Yoda, without any of these other people that we know around him.
Yeah.
And I think Yoda could carry his own movie. But that's not like, you know, high on my list of
right. I'd say
standalones to see.
Yeah. Cause you would need strong like supporting characters around him, because that him talking a lot in a film would get annoying. As much as I love Yoda, I think he would need a strong supporting character group around him.
Exactly. And that's the thing with a movie set in the Jedi Order, is you could develop a strong ensemble cast with Yoda as a part of it. So, you know, other Jedi or whatever, and then, of course, whatever villainous group that you have
right.
that's opposing them.
Yeah.
That would be something that could lend itself to a nice ensemble cast.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
Do you have any other ideas or...
You know, in all honesty, I would love to see a Wedge Antilles movie.
I was thinking about that. I was thinking a Rogue Squadron
movie. Or a Rogue Squadron movie anyway, yeah.
No, something like that, with Wedge as the focal point.
Right.
You know, obviously. So that's on my list here, so that's awesome. I figured you and I would be thinking along the same lines, but
what
would be even cooler is if we got a Rogue Squadron TV series done with like the style of maybe Game of Thrones.
Did you see that leaked article from supposedly Hasbro for their toy collection line for the next up through 2020?
No, I don't think
so. You didn't see that article? Okay.
When did that come out?
I want to say last week or a week before that.
I don't think
so. But it's essentially so for 2015 or for 2014, they have like the Rebels line to come out. 2015, episode 7. 2018, the Boba Fett movie. 2019, episode 8. 2019, or the following year. So I'm just going to screw the years. It goes their Rebels line, then they're making Episode 7 figures, then they're making Boba Fett standalone film figures, and then Episode 8, and then the Han Solo standalone characters figures, and then Episode 9, and then there's something called Red 5.
Oh, yeah. No, I did see that.
Okay.
I did see that. Okay. And, you know, who knows if those are the actual lines?
Right. Or who knows if this is even real? Filling, right? You know. Yeah. But
it could be that could be the case, but I will always wait and see on these things, especially with leaked things.
Right.
You know, and with these lines that they're naming, they could just be place fillers.
Yeah.
For whatever it is that they're coming up with. So we'll see.
Exactly.
But I would really love to see a Rogue Squadron Wedge Antilles centric movie or TV series with X-Wings and that sort of awesome.
Some really cool dog fights and stuff would be awesome.
Yes.
You know, and that's,
and now with the technology that they have that they can do some really epic dog fighting stuff with X-Wings now is something I'm super stoked about. So
yeah. And to me, they could do a Rogue Squadron movie, you know, shortly before taking place shortly before episode 4 or even between 4 and 5 or 5 and 6. You don't need to have the main characters in it. Like, they could be referenced. Although, I guess, well, that'd be tough because you need...
The thing is, you could even put it between episode 6 and 7, sort of start right. working the connective tissue Ooh, between true. The two
yeah.
trilogies there. So, yeah.
Good point. Who else were you thinking?
I would like to see a movie centered around Sidious and Plagueis.
Mm-hmm.
We got the story from Palpatine that you and I so wonderfully acted out earlier on this episode.
I don't know what you're talking about.
But I would like to see that. I would, you know, I've read the Darth Plagueis novel, and there's a lot of interesting stuff in there about how Sidious, how Palpatine became Darth Sidious. And, you know, I don't need the Plagueis novel to be made into a movie, but something that covers that sort of time frame and something that gives us an insight into their relationship and how they started forming the foundation for this grand plan that Palpatine executed so brilliantly. Because by the time we get to the Phantom Menace, he's got a lot of his dominoes already set up and he just has to start making them fall.
Yeah.
And so seeing how he gets to that point would be something I would love to have a movie about.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a really good point. You know, and honestly, here was saying, 10 minutes ago, how I don't really want any main characters. Well, I shot myself in the foot.
The thing is, Palpatine, while he's so prominent story-wise, he's not like a main character.
Exactly.
Except in episode 3.
Right.
So.
But I would love... I mean, I would love to see a movie between episodes 3 and 4 where Vader just is on the prowl, right? Like, really solid. Even it could take place shortly after episode 3, before the events of Rebels come into existence too, right? Like, part of what pushes the Rebel movement. I just want to see Darth Vader as Darth Vader in a live action way kill some people with his red lightsaber. That sounded terrible, but I mean, let's be honest. We all want that in some way. Maybe a character movie about Bail Organa. Jimmy Smits is still fine in age-wise, right? Like, it would be great to see Alderaan.
The formation of the official formation of the Rebel Alliance.
Yeah.
Would be interesting, or maybe even a movie surrounding how the Rebels get the Death Star plans.
Right. Yeah.
So,
like a James Bond movie in Star Wars, right? You know, we have some sort of agents. But yeah, that would be really cool too. I gotta say, the early
Rebels,
right,
would be really interesting. And, you know, I don't know how much of that they can do with the upcoming Rebels TV series, you know, how much of that might be covered in there, but, you know, if it works, I would love to see a live action movie dealing with some of that stuff.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. You know, a thought just popped into my head, though. I almost wonder, though, if the plan is to do a standalone Boba Fett movie and a standalone Han Solo movie, and then eventually do what, Marvel and DC plan to do. Eventually make a Han Solo versus Boba Fett movie, right? Because we know that they supposedly have a past together.
Right.
I don't think I'd want to see that, but I wonder if they might go that route. You know what I mean?
Yeah. It's interesting to think about that they might, but with the way that the movies are going, 7, 8, 9, the standalones are either going to have to be sort of connective tissue between the already existing films, or things of that nature, or they're going to have to be stuff to set up what's been going on between episodes 6 and 7.
Yeah.
And this is why I think with the novels, and I haven't talked to anybody about this, but with the novels, I think we're going to get a lot of books dealing with the prequel and classic trilogy time frames, and we're not going to get a lot of stuff dealing with the time between 6 and 7 until episode 9 is on its way out to theaters, because right. they have to solidify everything that's going to happen in those movies. And since they're going to try and make everything fit together even more than they had been before, they need to know for sure what's going on in the films before they can license material to cover the stuff in between.
Yeah, good point.
And I think that's how they're going to have to treat the standalone movies too. So
yeah. Yes.
But yeah.
Yeah. Well, those are some of my thoughts about standalone films.
Yes, and some of mine as well. So,
But before we go, Jason, we have a Larian inquiry.
Oh, yes.
Roger Peroni sent this in on Facebook. I'm going to... Well, the heck with that. I'm going to read the whole thing because it's good. He says, I've got an inquiry for you guys. The character of Darth Vader is meant to be menacing, evil, and overall monster. Recently, pop culture has turned him into something less than scary. I'm not criticizing that in any way. But my question is, what is the best way to make Vader a scary character again? A character that we will all hate. My solution is the only way we make him to be the character out he is supposed to be, he needs to kill characters we love, mercilessly and without any thought. For example, imagine how many people would despise Vader if he killed, as much as I might hate this, Ahsoka in a movie or Star Wars Rebels. Or the Inquisitor fails to destroy the crew of the Ghost, and Vader comes in and kills them all. This is, of course, after we fall in love with the whole team. Or even a standalone movie that follows a team of Jedi post-Purge, and then Vader shows up at the end of the movie and kills them all. I know he's been shown as bad in books and comics, but it needs to be shown in action, and it needs to be characters that are really likable to showcase how much of a monster he was. So this is a great question, I think, that Roger's presenting to us. Great question, Roger. I mean, for me, I think, you know, Roger kind of answered his own question, in my opinion. You know, he makes a great point. Really, what we need to see is we need to see Darth Vader be the brutal character that we saw in Episode 4. You know, I mean, we don't need to turn him into, like, Jason from Friday the 13th or Michael Myers, whatever. I'm not a horror movie person. Right? He doesn't need to, like, go around slashing and killing people, but we need to see him be a real problem for some protagonists that we care about. We need to really see him be the antagonist again that he was in the original films. And I think part of it is also the marketing. Like, a lot of the marketing they did for Episode 3, Darth Vader almost just became kind of a cheesy-looking character. Like, the helmet was just overused, and I think that takes away some of the scariness. And even the colors they used for him in the early marketing, everything is black and dark. And now it's like, yeah, there's like all these flame colors around it. I'm thinking specifically of a lot of the Revenge of the Sith merchandising, but I didn't like it. It was just too childish. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I mean, I think that's exactly it. We need to see him show up in Rebels and kill some characters that we care about. I think that's a great way of doing it. I would love to see a standalone film, maybe going back to what we were talking about, Jason, maybe a standalone film with Ahsoka in it and Darth Vader shows up and kills her. I mean, that would be extremely powerful for setting up, again, just how bad he is. And sorry, I'm about to get off topic for a quick second, but I think, trust me, it'll make sense. And Jason, I feel like I've said this to you before. I don't know if I've said it on any of our past episodes, but I think, and this is something I was thinking about a few months ago when I was watching Revenge of the Sith, is, the fans were upset that we didn't see Darth Vader being Darth Vader. Well, it's because this is the story where he becomes Darth Vader. He's not going to immediately become this horrible, menacing character overnight. But I tell you what, spend even a couple of months in that suit, just being this menacing force, being put in that costume is what ultimately dehumanizes what's left of Anakin. And I think we really need to see that now in some of the stuff that we'll get between episodes 3 and 4 is we need to really see just how much Anakin has died inside of Darth Vader by killing people that we care about. And I still think the best way of doing that is either whether it shows up in Rebels, or I think it'd be even more epic in a standalone film, is getting something where Ahsoka shows up again and Vader confronts her and kills her. I think that would be a great way of reclaiming the badassery of Darth Vader. So, but what do you think?
I agree. There needs to be something to bridge the end of Revenge of the Sith with the beginning of A New Hope, as far as Vader's intimidating self is concerned, because everybody in that movie is afraid of him, except Tarkin. But every one of our heroes is afraid of him in some way. Particularly the rebel troopers and Han and Chewie and all them. They are afraid of Vader. And we need a reason why everybody is afraid of Vader. I don't know if I would go as far. While I understand and I see how it could work with Vader killing Ahsoka, I don't know if we necessarily need to bring Vader killing his own former apprentice into it. I do think Ahsoka needs to die at some point, but I don't think Vader needs to do it. But we do need Vader to progress from just this broken shell of a man that we see at the end of Revenge of the Sith to being the monster, the enforcer that we see at the beginning of A New Hope. There needs to be some pathway to get him to that, and I believe we do need to see that, and I think some of the upcoming novels might help, but it would be very helpful to see that in Rebels, in a standalone. So yeah, I think we need to see that. I don't think it needs to be brutal and, you know, just bodies flying all over the place and all that sort of thing, but there needs to be that progression, that development of his character, or deterioration of his character, if you will.
Yeah.
To get to that point, because we need to see how far the loss of Padme has affected him. So,
yeah. Yeah, and I think it's something that can be done very easily.
I think so, and I don't think it needs to be overused either.
Right.
I think we just need one, maybe two, you know, steps.
Yeah.
To get him to that point. I don't think we need a lot, because overusing him, and it becomes a trope, and it becomes bland. So,
yeah.
I don't want to see an entire series of Darth Vader going out on missions to kill people, you know, that sort of thing. Maybe one standalone movie, maybe a couple of nods to stuff in Rebels, but that's it.
Yeah.
I don't, and a couple novels, you know, that sort of thing. But we can't have just a flood of Vader-centric mayhem come out that takes place between episodes 3 and 4.
Right.
Because then that waters him down.
Yeah, and I don't think you will get that.
No. I don't think so either, but I just want to caution
right.
that.
Right. But again, a standalone film with Darth Vader wouldn't be impossible either, because it's very easy to probably still get James Earl Jones to do the voice, and you can get anybody inside it. It's a full body costume. So
right. I mean, you could get Dwayne Johnson inside the costume.
He's too big.
he is too big. You'd have to slim him down a little bit.
Yeah.
At this point, but you know, whatever. He's active enough still.
I'm thinking the kid that plays Sheldon Cooper on The Big Bang Theory would make a great Darth Vader.
Oh goodness. But yeah, I mean, get someone who's big and intimidating in size and athletic enough to move.
Yes.
In that suit, convincingly.
Right.
Because right. I suppose my only big complaint about Vader in the classic trilogy is that he moves very stiffly.
Yes.
Especially in the saber fights.
Right.
And you can, if you're paying close attention, you can tell which shots are Dave Prowse and which shots are the stunt guy.
Oh, interesting.
Bob Anderson, I think, is his name.
Okay. Yeah, I think you're right. Yep.
But there was a lot of the Return of the Jedi duel, and some of the Empire Strikes Back duel, well, especially Bob Anderson stepped in and fought for Vader. So,
yeah.
But that's just something I'm thinking, you know, out loud here. But yeah, so I think we need to have some sort of connective tissue. I'm using that metaphor a
lot.
You
love connective tissue.
Yeah, it's connective tissue. Especially with
and you even made us part of connective tissue tonight with your comparison. You're all about being connected tonight, Jason.
Exactly. Exactly.
But
yeah.
Yes.
I would agree with Roger that we need something. I don't think it needs to be a lot, and I don't think it necessarily needs to be a soak up.
Right.
But we need something.
Yeah. Yeah. So anyway, I think that's going to wrap this episode up.
All right. And folks, don't forget, we still have the poll that I'm going to put back out on our social media after this episode goes up. What is your favorite Star Wars complete soundtrack? So be thinking about that and watch social media in order to respond to that if you haven't already. And even if you have, go ahead and do it again. I don't care. This isn't scientific. But if people want to respond to the poll or our thoughts on Anakin's fall or our thoughts on the standalone movies or anything else, submitted Laried Inquiry, how can they do that, Mr. LeClaire?
They can find us on Facebook, facebook.com/WampusLairPodcast. You can follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/WampusLair. And you can send us an email at WampusLairPodcast@gmail.com.
Indeed. And any final thoughts before we wrap up this episode, Mr. LeClaire?
45 minutes from my 29th birthday, Jason.
Wow.
I know.
Happy early birthday.
I'm going to be so old.
don't say that, because that makes me feel like I'm not too far behind.
By 29, Anakin was already Darth Vader, and he was already killing people.
Wow.
So that's true. It's good to know I'm not that horrible.
I'm already older than Anakin was when he turned to the dark side.
That's true. You did it. We're both successful.
Yes.
So far as Force goes, we're probably going to be old people when we come back.
So, exactly.
Just kidding. I'm totally going to be Hayden Christensen.
But then you won't be Carl.
That's true. That's a good point.
I will miss that.
Yeah, I'll be Carl. As long as Joe Hogan comes back as Jar Jar, though. So I'll be content.
And with that, we'll wrap up this episode of the Wampus Lair Podcast. This has been episode number 93.
That is why you fail.
For Carl, I'm Jason, and we will see you next time here in the Wampus Lair.
Leave it. Heck, it's why you fail.
I started a little recording sample to get the differences between you and me. Would you say a few things?
Okay.
I don't believe any of those were words.